move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant of Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Today's chaplain is Reverend Richard Carlson, a retired pastor and a member of Roseville Lutheran Church. And after the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Thank you for inviting me to come today. Let us pray. Gracious God, we gather here at the start of a new day in the halls of power of our state. Called elected leaders entrusted by the vote of the citizens of Minnesota to give leadership to respond to the difficult, many-sided issues which have waves of effect on our communities. We are people on a journey of trying to make sense of our own lives, to live within our own skin. We are shaped by our family of origin and influenced and molded by the experiences of our lives to be the persons we are right here, right now. Given our individual selves, our differences, our fears, anxieties and struggles, and our deepest convictions and hopes, quiet our hearts and minds, open our eyes and attune our ears to ponder, to see, and to listen with humility, compassion, and courage, and energy to what we face this day. And then from your wind-blowing, life-giving spirit, we present ourselves now for your instruction and guidance, and we pray that you would breathe your truth among us. This season of spring is so welcome and filled with such newness and hope. Refresh us to find freedom in our obedience and delight in our vocation. And by your forgiveness, transpose us into agents of your will. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic.
Thank you.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeCraif, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Fischbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Hayden, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingerbritzen, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Cruz, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Lori, Magnus, Marty, McGuire, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Wieger, Wolf.
Quorum is present. Moving to the fifth order of business, reports of committee.
Madam President, I move the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
Senator Lori.
Madam President, Senate File 2255 is a health insurance exchange bill that never got a hearing in the Health Committee. Therefore, pursuant to Rule 21, I object to the reference of Senate File 2255.
Senate File 2255 will be sent to Rules under Rule 21. Senator Senjum renews his motion that the reports of committees be adopted with the exception of Senate File 2255. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills. There are several printed on page 3 of today's agenda. Second reading. I'm sorry, I didn't see the 2255 was under there. The sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills with the exception of 2255, second reading. Seventh order of business, second reading of House bills. There is one printed on today's Senate agenda on page 3, second reading. Eighth order of business, the introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's Senate bill introductions with the exception of Senate File 2466 will be referred to local government and elections, and there are several to be read by the Secretary. The Secretary will read.
Ingebretson, for the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, introduces Senate File Number 2490, a bill for an act relating to game and fish.
Senate File 2490 will be referred to the Committee on Finance. The Secretary will read the next introduction.
Gazelka introduces Senate File Number 2491, a bill for an act relating to state government.
Senate File 2491 will be referred to the State Government Innovations and Veterans Committee. Secretary will read the next introduction.
Olson, Daly, Cruz, Lilly, Peterson introduce a bill, Senate File Number 2492, a bill for an act relating to education finance.
Senate File 2492 will be referred to the Committee on Education. The Secretary will read the next introduction.
Ingebretson, for the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, introduces Senate File Number 2493, a bill for an act relating to natural resources.
Senate File 2493 will be referred to Finance Committee.
Is there mine or yours?
Yes. First reading, and they are referred as indicated. The ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. There are four printed on page 3 of today's Senate agenda. They will be accepted as one motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. There is one Senate resolution number 135 that will be referred to rules. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Senjum.
Madam President, members, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate that the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration. And they would be the bills, Madam President, on the sheet that should be on each desk. We're going to do those with the exception of Bill Number 5, Senate File 1072 by Gimsey. We're not going to do that one today. The rest will be presented to the body for special orders.
Senator Senjum has designated the bills under special order. We will begin with number 12 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 1788. Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 1788 is a very simple bill. The idea is to start a discussion.
Senator Howe, you need to make the motion regarding. No, I'm sorry, you don't need to. It's special orders. I was thinking general orders. It was my mistake. Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 1788 is a very simple bill. The idea is to start a discussion at the Public Utilities Commission and with the electrical utilities over the interim regarding the best way to reduce our regulatory burden. This legislation calls on utilities and the PUC to identify where there is waste in the system and then bring it back their findings and recommendations next session. Senate File 1788 does not change any of the state's energy policy. Utilities will still work to meet the state mandates and goals. This legislation provides a platform for utilities and agency staff to discuss and determine what information is necessary to verify and record compliance, what information is needed by consumers and agency staff, and what is the most efficient and expeditious way to provide that information. It will allow a method to address the redundancies and duplicative filings. Senate File 1788 is a fair and consistent way to encourage utility and stakeholder participation. This is an important first step in removing duplicative and redundant filings in order to ensure that the bigger stuff gets done faster. So I'd urge your support for the passage of 1788.
Discussion on Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to rise in support of this of the Howell Bill, Senate File 1788. I think this is a prudent examination I think this is a benefit certainly to utilities and stakeholders, but also to the Public Utilities Commission, which has a very, very burdensome dockets, and we simply haven't delivered to them the resources they need to do all of the work that we ask and require of them. So I thank Senator Howe for bringing this bill forward.
Secretary will give Senate File 1788 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1788, a bill for an act relating to utilities, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1788. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving to the number 19 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 1917, Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Madam President. This bill has to do with the school code and restraint usage. In certain settings in schools, we have some behaviors that are extreme and sometimes become very dangerous to the student as well as to others around the student. And occasionally, a prone restraint is used in those situations. In 2011, the Minnesota Department of Education began to instruct school districts to not use the prone restraints. And in the 2011 Omnibus Education Bill, we enacted a provision that would allow school districts to continue using the prone restraints if it was done properly, safely, with well-trained staff, and records were kept. The new law was given an expiration date of August 1st, 2012. And this bill would extend that date 1 year because there's not been enough time to, number one, gather enough data as far as how often it's being used, and number two, to determine whether or not it should be eliminated, and number three, see whether or not we have something else that can take its place. And I would ask everyone for a green vote for this.
Further discussion on Senate File 1917. Secretary will give Senate File 1917 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1917, a bill for an act relating to education, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1917. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Continuing on the special orders list, we will go to number 22 on the general orders calendar, House File 1515, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. House File 1515 is a bill that was brought to me by the National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials and is a product of negotiations between them, the public housing agencies, the Multi-Housing Association, and various private landlords and legal services. Madam President, one of the provisions last year that was passed established a limit on the late fees that a landlord could charge and was set at a rate of not to exceed 8%. on the tenant's monthly rent. There was also a provision made for public agencies to be able to rely on federal statutes and regulations regarding the setting of late fees for their tenants. Since the 2010 session, there's some question had arisen as to whether or not this language clearly separated the public agencies and the ability to set their limits in accordance with federal statutes, and consequently this bill was brought. And if you will note in subparagraph A, that specifically talks about the 8% rate for overdue rent, then subdivision B goes into the exception allowing for implementation of the federal regulations. With that, Madam President, I would stand for questions, but I would again indicate there is no controversy involving this bill that I am aware of. Thank you, Madam President.
Discussion, Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President, and I rise in support of Senator Newman's bill. This part of the provisions that he referenced were parts of a bill that I carried, and these are important clarifications. I think there was an open question at the time about whether or not federal laws and regs would apply, and this clarifies that. And part of it is a bill that actually was advocated by tenant advocates. So I did speak with folks who advocate on behalf of tenants and renters, and they are in support of this bill as well. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate or House File 1515. Seeing none, the Secretary will give House File 1515 its third reading.
House File Number 1515, a bill for an act relating to real property, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 1515. Although senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next bill on special orders is number 61 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 2166, Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, this bill has to do with school bus equipment standards and updates to statutory school bus safety. There are four parts to this. The first one has to do with flashing signals be painted black around the outside so that they would be more easily noticed. Then there's also eliminating a statutory requirement that has to do with the seat depth and height. Also includes adding an auxiliary fan, which would help in Minnesota with windows that get fogged up and full of frost. And the last one has to do with video surveillance equipment. This part does not have to do with the use of video surveillance, and it was a little confusing in committee. This has nothing to do with the video cameras. It simply states that on the bus, where they will be mounted is near the in the driver compartment area. So it has nothing to do with the actual
Excuse me, Senator Wolf,
videotapes.
Just a moment. Members? Those members who are trying to listen to Senator Wolf's presentation are having a difficult time hearing. Please keep your voices down or take your conversations outside of the chamber.
Thank you, Madam President. Anyway, these are the four parts to improving bus safety standards. These would all go into effect after December 31st, 2012 for any buses that will be used in Minnesota. It is not retroactive, so any buses that are currently being used do not have to go and have these items added. But for any buses in the future from after December 31st, this year we'll have to have these provisions. And I encourage members for a green vote. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 2166. Senator Harrington.
Madam President, I rise in support of this bill. I've had conversations with the Minnesota State Patrol and traffic engineers and traffic safety folks who say that this bill will, in fact, make school buses in the state of Minnesota far safer. It will also make them far cheaper for both manufacturers and for school districts to operate. So I also encourage and support Senator Wolf and encourage a green vote.
Secretary will give Senate File 2166 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2166, a bill for an act relating to public safety. Third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 2166. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving to number 10 on the general orders calendar, House File 1560, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. House File 1560 is a bill which would give final decision-making authority to the Office of Administrative Hearings and Administrative Law Judges. And to give you a very, very summarized version of the history of administrative hearings, I would indicate that there are state agencies, departments, commissions, boards, who are authorized by Minnesota law to propose rules and regulations which then issue licensing and permits and regulations which regulate that industry. And I bring to your attention, I photocopied the table of contents of Minnesota rules. And these rules are grouped under the agency that administers them, and I will tell you that there are 28 pages of just the table of contents of the rules and about 600 different categories. Administrative law judges and OEH is an area that was strictly created by the legislature for providing a judicial venue to independently determine issues that are contests between state agencies and our private businesses. And the purpose of it was to allow administrative law judges to determine the merits of a dispute between the private businesses and citizens. The current statutes that are applicable that I want to bring your attention to fall under the Administrative Procedure Act, which is Chapter 14, of our statutes. And specifically, the definition of an agency means any state, officer, board, commission, etc., that is authorized by law to adjudicate contested cases. A contested case is then defined as the agency which determines the legal rights, duties, privileges of specific parties and their constitutional rights. In particular, I think that is that's a very, very important point that I want you to absorb, because we are talking about the legal rights and privileges and constitutional rights of your constituents. Then the third statute that I want to bring to your attention specifically is the rules which agencies enact. And these are rules which are adopted and implemented and carry the force of law in the state of Minnesota once adopted by the state agencies. Under current law, OAH and administrative law judges have the authority to make final decisions in certain kinds of cases. Just as an example, in a veteran's preference hearing or in a revenue recapture hearing, the administrative law judge's decision is final. However, in some cases involving contests between an agency and a private party, an ALJ is allowed only to make a recommendation to the commissioner. And the commissioner of that state agency has the ultimate authority to make that decision. So I'm going to give you three reasons why I believe the Office of Administrative Hearings should be able to provide final decision-making authority in all contested cases. And I do so because I believe it will enhance the public confidence in resolving contested cases. First of all, it would provide consistency in the application of statutes and rules governing issues that are to be resolved in contested cases. With this bill, agencies would not be permitted to rewrite findings of fact, conclusions of law, that follow a public hearing and a decision by an administrative law judge. In this regard, I would point out to you that the Office of Administrative Hearings provides strict oversight in the procedures in handling these cases, including a peer review of every case that comes in front of them, including the chief judge over at OAH. The second point that I want to make in terms of an OAH or an administrative law judge making the final decision is it would streamline the procedure in making this decision. And in that regard, I think this bill would provide both a savings in time and money for state agencies and our constituents. We have a fiscal note in this file that shows no fiscal impact, and this is a situation where I frankly disagree. I think that we would actually save money by adopting this bill. Very briefly, the procedure in an administrative law case is a commissioner would issue a corrective action order. The constituent then would have the right to ask for reconsideration of that order. The commissioner then, in effect, overrides the request for reconsideration and implements the corrective action order, at which point the constituent is entitled to a contested hearing. The contested hearing then is taken, in which evidence, testimony, etc., is taken. The administrative law judge then makes specific findings of fact and relates those findings back to evidence that was produced in the hearing. The administrative law judge then implements what are called conclusions of law and cites the law that is applicable, and then sends that back to the commissioner as a recommendation. There are times when the commissioner then accepts the recommendation of the ALJ, and times he says no and overrides the ALJ and issues a final order. The constituent then has the right to ask the commissioner for reconsideration of the final order. And The commissioner then makes that determination and decides whether or not to confirm the final order. It's at this stage, after all of these various steps that have been taken, that the constituent finally has the right of appeal to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. And I will represent to you that this is the first time that your constituent has the right to have their case decided by an impartial fact finder with decision-making authority. I believe that if adopted, I would envision that there are many of these procedural steps that would be rendered unnecessary once the ALJ makes his final decision. There would be a right of reconsideration, but I would think it would be patterned similar to what is utilized in the district court actions, in which reconsideration of a final decision is only entertained in the event of fraud or abuse or perhaps evidence that is newly discovered that could not have reasonably been discovered prior to the actual hearing. The third reason why I think this would be a good idea is because it would provide our constituents with a fair and expeditious decision-making process wherein the decision is made by a disinterested third party. Under current law, our citizen litigants, which are private businesses and our constituents, do not get a hearing by an independent fact finder with decision-making authority until they get to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I don't believe that we should allow a state agency, which by definition, by statutory definition, is a party to the contested hearing, should have the authority to then decide the issues in that contested hearing. To illustrate that point, I want to just cite a Minnesota Court of Appeals case, which is the in re the revocation of the family child care license of Linda Beckman. It's a Minnesota Court of Appeals case in which the court said that the ability to recast the trial judge's findings and conclusions is a significant advantage for agencies when defending an appeal of a decision. It is my position that I simply don't think it's right or fair that the government is allowed to write rules, which is a legislative function, to investigate violations of those rules that they have just written, which is an executive branch power, and then allow the agency to sit in judgment of the rules that they have written and investigated. This appears to me to be the legislative, executive, and judicial branches of government all rolled up into one, which results in the loss of our citizens' legal rights, duties, and privileges. And it's simply too much power consolidated in the hands of too few. So let me give you some examples of some cases that I'm personally familiar with. And I would ask that you remember that these are just examples, but I think that they are pretty important. I had prepared a list of what I am calling regulatory abuses, and they consisted of about 25 different cases. And with the exception of one, which was Scheffelbein Farms, I have routinely been asked not to disclose the name of the constituent who is complaining about the state agency. But in the case of the Scheffelbein Farms, this is a case in which this business wants to build a barn up in Kimball, Minnesota, to house an expansion of their beef industry. They are prepared to spend $1 million in putting up this building. $1 million into the economy in a small town in Minnesota, where they're going to employ contractors, electricians, plumbers, etc. They have been trying to get a permit out of the PCA for 2 years. And we're told by the PCA, we can't give you a permit because we don't have the rules applicable to this particular project that you want to build. And to me, that is simply abusive. I want to cite for you a case that I was involved in. involving the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. This is a business. This one happens to have now turned public, and so I'm free to cite it, and involved in agricultural business in Hutchinson. And in that case, there was a well on this property, and this well was contaminating the water supply. Department of Agriculture came in and over a number of years worked with this business to clean up that well. And after about a period of about 5 years, after this business had spent about $100,000, the water tested clear. It tested clean. And at that point, the Department of Agriculture came into this business and ordered them to seal the well that they had just spent $100,000 fixing. And what they did was they issued what's called a corrective action order. And lest you believe that these correction action orders are not intimidating on your constituents, let me just give you an idea of what it says. This is the cover letter to the corrective action order. And it says, this order can be enforced by imposition of administrative penalties. It says that you have a right to appeal any issues in this corrective action order, but you are now liable for administrative and staff costs incurred by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture in regard to this order. The corrective order itself says, and I will point out to you members, that this is an order that carries the force of law, just like, for instance, a district court action. This order goes on to say that failure to comply with this order may result in a legal action to compel you to comply, and it will carry with it an assessment of up to $250 per day in administrative penalties. The action order, this corrective action order, is then signed by an individual by the name of Kathleen A. Villas-Horns. Now get this, who is a supervisor with the Incident Response Unit of the Regulatory and Response Section of the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. This corrective action order is then co-signed by a Mr. Paul Lamont, who is an assistant director of Regulatory and Response Section, Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And the reason I'm pointing this out, members, I want to specifically ask or point out to you just how intimidating these orders are, number one, and number two, how did we get ourselves in a position where we have a supervisor and an assistant supervisor signing orders that carry the force of law, which directly affect our constituents and our constituents' businesses. The last abuse that I want to point out to you is contained in the handout that I sent to you. And this came to me directly in response to a conversation that I had with a constituent. And in this case, here's what I want you to pick out of this handout. In the first paragraph, this constituent of mine points out the fact that he's involved with a hotel franchise in my town, and what they wanted to do was expand so that they could provide continental breakfast, which included waffles. Now, we've all gone to motels where you're going to have a continental breakfast, and you're going to stand up there at the little waffle maker and make yourself a waffle. Go to the second page. And in conclusion, he says, we felt that we were bullied and exploited by all of the agencies that we were encountered by this situation. It says that we were caught in a no-win situation and that they felt powerless to do anything about this. They go on to say, and get this, They had to spend $30,000 in remodeling costs and $11,700 in fees to serve pre-mixed waffles. And then go right down to the last sentence. We ask that you please keep confidentiality in this matter so that we do not become a target of the health department again. And members, the fear of retribution is something that I bumped into over and over and over again in talking to my constituents when dealing with state agencies. I have a constituent who owns a small manufacturing business in my district. And this particular constituent has been dealing with DALI, Minnesota OSHA, the PCA. And what this businessman told me is that he now has, this is a small manufacturing firm, employs less than 70 people. He has a full-time employee that deals strictly with the implementation of safety and regulatory matters that come out of the state of Minnesota. And in addition, he pays a private company from the metropolitan area over $1,000 a month just to keep him current on regulations. And he told me point blank that if Minnesota OSHA walks through his door, even with these expenditures, it will cost him over $5,000 in penalties and fees. He simply is unable to keep up. To point out to you what I would consider the sheer arrogance of some of our state agencies, I'm going to share with you an email that I received in response to this bill when I filed it. And I will tell you candidly, I don't think the state agencies are very happy with this bill because they uniformly have opposed it. But in particular, I want to share this email with you. And it came from a Mr. Dan Wolf. I received it on February 17th of this year. And Mr. Wolf is an assistant executive secretary with the PUC. And in part, this is what he told me. If this legislation were to become law, the procedures at PUC would be modified. Get this, rather than refer matters to the Office of Administrative Hearings, the commission itself would conduct these contested cases and evidentiary hearings. And I view that, members, as a not-so-veiled threat of simply refusing to abide by a directive of this legislature. And I want to remind you that these agencies don't exist. They don't get their authority except when the legislature gives them that authority under the Administrative Procedures Act. I have taken the position and I believe that all of us represent constituents. We represent people. We don't represent agencies and boards and commissions. And so in this regard, insofar as this bill is concerned, what I'm trying to do is provide some relief to our constituents. So for instance, if you are an urban legislator, I can tell you with absolute certainty you have got daycares providers in your district. And you have parents who rely on those daycare providers to watch their children. And these daycare providers are regulated, and they are regulated very, very heavily by the Department of Human Services. If you are a suburban legislator, or perhaps you are a legislator who has a lot of resorts in your district, I can tell you that small businesses and the hospitality industry are heavily regulated by the Minnesota Department of Health and the Minnesota Department of Revenue. If perhaps you are a rural legislator, your constituents constantly are dealing with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, the PCA, and the DNR. You've also got, if you are at all like my district, small manufacturing firms in your district. And my constituents, in terms of small manufacturing, are dealing with OSHA, the Department of Labor, and the PCA on a constant basis. If you live in northern Minnesota, maybe Grand Rapids or International Falls, the industry that comes to mind for me would be the pulp industry, paper making. And the PCA and the DNR are heavily involved with your constituents. Iron Range legislators. I lived on the Iron Range for a long time, and I came to greatly admire the workers from the Iron Range. And Iron Rangers, you know, they when the economy goes bad and they lose their jobs, they leave, they go try and find jobs someplace else, but they always go home. And the Iron Range legislators, you're dealing with all of these regulatory agencies. You've got them all. You've got the PCA, the PUC, the DNR, you've got OSHA. And I know for a fact that on the Iron Range, what you have is minerals. You can't do any farming. In my estimation, really isn't geared towards the resort industry. What you have is mining. And I can't think of an area in the state of Minnesota that has been more adversely affected by the state agencies of this state than the Minnesota Iron Range. And the Minnesota Iron Range has contributed enormously to this state and the health and the economy of this state. They have contributed enormously. I wonder how much money has been spent by PolyMet, for instance, in simply trying to get a permit to open up a mining business on the Iron Range. $25 million? $30 million? Higher than that, I'm being told. Lots and lots of money. That's to get a permit to start a mining operation to put people on the Iron Range to work. And I will tell you, members, if I don't pull a green vote out of every Iron Range legislator on the floor, if I don't pull a green vote out of the legislators out of the city of Duluth who rely heavily, heavily on the Iron Range, I'm going to be very, very surprised. Because of all of the areas of the state of Minnesota that have been adversely affected more, I can't think of any other than the Iron Range, and I am speaking now from personal experience. Finally, I would say, members, that this is a system which we, the legislature, has created. It doesn't exist without our blessing, and we've let it get away from us. And I'm going to urge you senators, my fellow senators, to take a real hard look and think about the constituents in your district that are being adversely affected by these administrative agencies, and give your constituents some relief by allowing an independent body, an agency that is not a party to the litigation, to decide their cases. I don't view this as a GOP versus a DFL issue. I don't see this as a conservative versus a liberal issue. I don't see this as a rural versus urban issue. I simply see this as a matter of, we have an obligation to protect our constituents. And over the last 20 years or so, this has really gotten away from us. So I would respectfully request that you give due consideration to your constituents, and I would ask for your support on this bill. Thank you, Madam President.
Further discussion on House File 1560, Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Newman listed with interest to what you were talking about with regard to the Department of Ag and the Administrative Law Judge. And I know you don't serve on that committee, but I do. And I know in the Ag Policy Bill that we're bringing forward shortly, there are provisions that deal with the Department of Ag and the Administrative Law Judge procedure that they have been using, where they are adding a civil law provision where they would use civil litigation as opposed to the Administrative Law Judge. And I don't know if you've been tracking with that or not, but it looked to me like that was a pretty good solution to the problem that you're working on here, in that they don't have to have a final determination of wrongdoing in order to move forward with negotiations with the customer, the constituent. And have you been tracking if that's happening in any other areas? Because I think the governor and the administration has been trying to work through some of this, and I know the Department of Ag has. And it was just a question, I guess, if you would yield, is if Senator Newman would yield.
Senator Newman will yield. Senator
Thank
Scoy.
You. Thank you, Madam President. Senator Newman, are you aware of this, and have you been following what's going on with regard to the Department of Ag?
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Scoy, the answer is no, I'm not aware of it, and I'm not aware of any bills currently going through the legislature that would be similar. I guess my response would be is that the whole point of the administrative law scheme is to provide a venue for contested matters as between citizens and the agencies that are regulating them. And the idea was to keep those cases out of the district court system. I rather suspect that if we were to incorporate the idea that you are talking about, to go to a civil law system rather than an administrative law judge system, as a lawyer, I will tell you, fine with me. You could repeal the Administrative Procedures Act, send all of these cases into the judicial branch, and you would get a fair hearing. You would also, in all probability, plug up the judicial branch with cases because they are simply not currently equipped from a manpower standpoint to handle them. But, you know, if that would be the decision of the body to send all of these contested cases into the judicial branch for resolution, I would not object. It would be an enormous fiscal cost. But our constituents would get a fair break. They would get a fair hearing.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Newman, I didn't propose that they were going to send all of them there, but they might send some of them there. And part of the advantage is that they don't have to have a final determination of wrongdoing, so that the individual that they're negotiating with hasn't been deemed a lawbreaker already. And it seems to be helpful in the process of trying to negotiate a solution if they're able to start without that final determination. And I was just, you know, this bill is here in front of us today, and I know there's other legislative activities going on, and I'm aware that the agencies and the administration are trying to solve some of these issues in the committees that I serve on. I don't serve on Department of Health, so I don't know what's going on over there. But I just thought that as you move forward with this bill, perhaps we should be aware of what's going on in other areas of the legislations in this very area that might be a solution to the problem you're trying to address.
Further discussion, Senator Wicker.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I rise to respectfully oppose House File 1560. Three main reasons. First, it takes away the authority of state agencies to determine the best course of action in relation to cases within their jurisdiction. Secondly, in the vast majority of cases, state agencies agree with the decisions provided by the Office of Administrative Hearings. And finally, State agencies, and this is very important, state agencies have the policy expertise to make the right decisions, not necessarily administrative law judges, and these cases are often very complex. We had testimony in committee, and I have distributed a letter from the Department of Labor and Industry dated March 1st, 2012, from Commissioner Ken Peterson. I'd like to just make reference to a couple of points. He makes reference to accountability is the great strength of the current system. Agency heads are appointed by the governor and approved by the Senate. Consequently, if an agency head overreaches or otherwise acts inappropriately in deciding contested cases, the governor can address the situation and, if necessary, remove the agency head. Alternatively, a legislative committee can call him or her on the carpet for not adhering to the law. Also, most ALJs, administrative law judges, are knowledgeable triers of facts. However, a recurring problem is lack of familiarity with subject matter, since it's impossible to be knowledgeable across the vast array of areas governed by state laws. Agencies and their decision makers have deep subject matter expertise. For example, in a MnDOT contested case, a city and railroad disputed establishing a new at-grade crossing. The ALJ recommended approving the crossing, but failed to allocate costs. MnDOT's commissioner accepted the ALJ recommendation, but also allocated costs for the crossing in a final decision. I, this would be Commissioner Ken Peterson, personally decided a wage case where the ALJ misunderstood. The ALJ misunderstood the type of heavy vehicle used by an employee. I corrected that section of his decision and ordered the employee he be appropriately reimbursed. Members, I urge you to vote against the provision, to look at some of the remedies that are being addressed now, and to keep in mind these are complex issues that can be dealt with in legislative committee. We do not need this sweeping change. And finally, there was reference to Mr. Wolf. Mr. Wolf in the Public Utilities Commission, I don't believe he was making a threat in his letter. He was just asking for or pointing out some information. I wish we would have had an opportunity for testimony, and I would encourage that perhaps we send this bill back to hear from the Public Utilities Commission about the impact of this legislation.
Further discussion, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. Two points that Senator Wieger brought up I'd like to address. First is the issue of expertise in the ALJ's familiarity of or not being able to be familiar with all areas. First of all, by comparison, in the district court system, a district court judge hears everything. They hear probate matters, they hear misdemeanor matters, they hear traffic court, and then they go on to murder ones and complex civil litigation. The same is true insofar as ALJs are concerned. And the point is that if we compare a system in which an ALJ has final decision-making authority, compare it to the district court action, both of which is contested litigation. An expert in any area, an expert witness, is allowed to come in and provide the judge or a jury in a district court action or an ALJ in an administrative action with an opinion on issues that are complex and difficult to understand. But in a district court action, that expert is never the fact finder, never makes the decision on the merits of the case. So in my estimation, the claim, and I've had this conversation with Commissioner Peterson, and the claim that the administrative law judges do not have the necessary expertise in order to decide the case is simply an argument without merit. Because precisely the same thing happens in a district court case where expert witnesses are able to come in and testify and give the fact finder, be it a judge or a jury, the assistance in order to understand the issues. Next, the issue of accountability. I guess that almost makes me chuckle. And so I'm going to ask you a rhetorical question. How can you seriously entertain the claim that a commissioner nominated by the governor and confirmed by the Senate is accountable to the people, but the chief judge of Office of Administrative Hearings, who is nominated by the governor and confirmed by the Senate, is not accountable to the people? I candidly do not understand that claim by Commissioner Peterson. Thank you, Madam President.
Further discussion on House File 1560. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, Senator Newman. I listened to your presentation of the bill, and I certainly understand the frustration that a number of the cases that you related to the chamber invoke, and I share some of that frustration. In fact, I'm dealing with the matter. Matter of fact, I spoke briefly with Senator Han about it, in which Health and Human Services has made some questionable rulings on the law in its internal process, and can understand the temptation to simply refer all of these matters immediately to the ALJ, the Office of Administrative Hearings. However, I think this bill is a pretty strong medicine. It's kind of a hammer in addressing the issue, and there may be some other way to address the problems that you cite rather than simply taking all of these contested cases out of the agencies. But in particular, Senator Newman, I'm concerned about your comments about the Public Utilities Commission and treating the Public Utilities Commission the same as you would all these others, simply because we have set up and we've designed the Public Utilities Commission as they do in most other states with I've seen the email that you cited, legislative function, it has administrative function and a quasi-judicial function. And we rely very, very heavily on the PUC to carry out all of those functions with a great deal of competency. And in fact, they have a tremendous amount of public accountability, of transparency. They do very little that escapes the attention of the legislature, that escapes the attention of all of the stakeholders. And they, by matter of design and course, they go to the Office of Administrative Hearings and they rely on administrative law judges to hold hearings and to establish the record of facts. And those record of facts are the basis upon which they make their decision. The public has access to those hearings. And then when the case comes over, the docket comes over to the PUC, there's a whole another opportunity to deliberate on the matter for stakeholders to have for the stakeholders themselves to participate in the process and have input, et cetera. And so, if we're going to do this and we're going to treat the Public Utilities Commission with the same manner as you do in your bill, and I think we just need to completely reconceptualize what we look to the PUC for, and we need to probably reorder its entire statutory framework and its authority and what we want them to do from us. I would hope that Senator Rosen is paying attention as well. We have a lot of discussion in Energy Committee and on the Energy Commission about the policies that are before us and whether the agency at Commerce is going to carry out some of those functions, whether we're going to retain oversight and detailed management as a legislature on some of those energy policy functions, or if we're going to delegate to the Public Utilities Commission to carry out. And I would say that in 80% of the time, we rely on the PUC to do that because we've designed them to function in that way, as they do in almost every other state. These essential utility services are an important, fundamental, vital function. The lights turn on, the telephone communication systems and other technology functions that they help administer. Very complicated, monopoly-based environment in which that market is carried out. It's very, very important that it's carried out with a whole lot of the public interests, someone paying attention to that with a really, really clear eye. And so, Senator Newman, I'm extremely concerned. You seem to have taken some offense at the communication from Mr. Wolf But he's simply communicating just quite clearly the implication, the ramification of your bill, and I don't think he should be criticized for just making it very plain to us as policymakers what will happen if your bill passes.
Further discussion, Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Weiger, your chief objection to this appears to be that the state regulations are so far-flung and complex that even professional arbiters cannot understand them and couldn't rule on them. And I'm just wondering, what is wrong with having some due process? How do you imagine our constituents feel when they are faced with the complexity of the far-flung rules and regulations of the state of Minnesota and left to handle them on their own without any due process and with only having a state bureaucrat to be their judge? I think this bill just provides some common sense protections for our citizens that is much needed in a situation where we have a state government that's expanding exponentially almost every decade. Thank you.
Senator Letts.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise to object to this bill and urge members to vote no on it. This is a really big bill, members. This has far-reaching implications for all of state government. Senator Dibble mentioned the impact on the Public Utilities Commission. This bill will affect decisions that get implemented by every commissioner, every agency in state government. So I've noted from the history on this bill that it was heard by one committee in the Senate, but it was not heard by the Education Committee, even though decisions by the Commissioner of Education will be impacted by this bill. It was not heard by Commerce and Consumer Protection, even though decisions of the Commissioner of Commerce will be impacted by this bill. It was not heard by the Energy, Utilities, and Telecommunications Committee, even though decisions by PUC and by the applicable agencies will be affected by this bill. It was not heard by Environment and Natural Resources, even though decisions by that agency will be affected. Health and Human Services, Higher Education, DEED, DALI, Judiciary. So all of you who serve on those committees that have direct responsibility for oversight or for considering policy relating to any of the state government agencies, this bill will actually take power away from your committees in some sense, because the commissioners that you hold accountable, when you call them in front of your committees to explain a decision here or to explain a policy role that they are advising or recommending there, they will no longer be as accountable to your committee because some of their power will have been delegated to administrative law judges who are at least once or twice further removed from the accountability function once they become members of the civil service. After they are appointed by the chief judge, they become members of the civil service, and the accountability is much, much less than the accountability of the elected officials or the more direct accountability from the governor to the commissioner of whichever agency we're dealing with. So it is a significant change in policy that this bill is bringing forward. I want to note that apparently Senator Newman was citing all sorts of examples relating to a list that he had put together for a different Senate file, a Legislative Review Act, his Senate file 575, which was intended to provide regulatory relief to the private business sector. And there's a list of different examples that he had for that, which apparently he was reading from in support of this bill, a different bill, by the way. And I don't know all the details and the merits of his other bill, but I do want to note, for example, there were some errors in his references. He had talked about a small manufacturing company in his district and a safety shoe violation issue relating to Minnesota OSHA. Well, that's not DEED that deals with Minnesota OSHA. That's DALI. He made reference to a Minnesota Department of Revenue issue relating to sales tax and use tax on equipment and production. But that's a function of statute, not a function of rule. Members, I query whether or not the examples that Senator Newman was giving are examples that should be used in support of the bill that we have in front of us for consideration today. I too want to, I've already addressed the question of accountability that Senator Wieger raised as well. It is a very significant concern that we ought to have before us. I want to clarify a couple of points as I see them from what Senator Newman said. He did mention that a district court judge is not the fact finder. Well, they are if the plaintiff waives the jury. Then the judge is both the fact finder and the concluder of law. I should also note that, parties that are aggrieved by a decision of the commissioner, the final decision maker in the current process, do have a right to go to the Court of Appeals. If there are errors of law by the commissioner of, for example, Dolly, the Court of Appeals reviews those questions as a de novo, as a question of first impression. And while they will give appropriate discretion as is required to the findings of fact and to the agency expertise, questions of law are reviewed as if they are seen for the first time when they go to the Court of Appeals. Because the Court of Appeals and ultimately the Supreme Court is the ultimate body to correct errors of law in the process. So, members, we have had the Administrative Procedures Act governing contested case proceedings in effect for 65 years in one form or another. And this major a step, this significant a change in that process, I will submit to you, deserves more than one committee hearing in the state Senate and a floor debate. I think it needs to be considered by a variety of other committees in this body that are going to have major, major impacts on the policies within their jurisdiction. So one might say, yeah, this is a bad idea. We shouldn't support it right now. One might also say, maybe we're not ready to decide this big question yet, and it ought to go through a more rigorous analysis in several committees in the Senate. I'd urge you to vote no on this bill, members.
Senator Lindner.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Latz, I'm glad you finally recognize the role of the judiciary in matters like this. I only wish that you would recognize an ALJ to be involved in it from the very beginning. You know, I suppose if you like government, if you like administration and not a balance of power, you would hate this bill. Because this brings in a different branch of government. It brings in some clear eyes to it. And let's face it, agencies do have their own agendas. They have their role. They have their desire to make sure that everyone complies. But if they're the ones ruling on whether there's a discrepancy somewhere, is that really the fair arbiter that's going to decide this? I think Senator Newman is bringing up a very good and valid point. And I believe we need to have an independent arbiter on this from the very beginning, not at the high cost of bringing your case to the Supreme Court or the Court of Appeals. I think it's long overdue that we have a more independent eyes and ears when either a discrepancy or a question or a rule is being enforced. Maybe it's being enforced capriciously. It desires a fair hearing. It desires an impartial hearing. And I think Senator Newman is bringing a bill that is long overdue in Minnesota, and I don't think there's any problem with an ALJ looking at this. Do we not trust ALJs? Do we not trust the lower level, but nevertheless a judiciary branch of government looking at this and deciding this? Are they somehow incompetent to make these decisions? Those are the questions that I think need to be asked in the event of justifying your position, Senator Latz.
Senator Latz.
Mr. President, to respond, I'm not quite sure what the my friend Senator Limmer was suggesting with regard to the lower level of judiciary involved, because all this bill does is it says it goes to the ALJ and it stops there. So there is an independent review, members. There is an objective, fresh eye looking at the questions, members. There is that independent analysis of the facts separate from the agency, and the agency goes in as one of the parties in the quasi-judicial proceeding before the administrative law judge. And the administrative law judge hears from all the parties and does a detailed factual analysis and will make findings of fact. We'll make strong recommendations one way or another about how those facts fit in with the law. The question here is not whether an ALJ gets to look at these things. The question is, what's the effect of the ALJ's decision? Is it the absolute final decision in the process? I mean, they are not appointed judges who in Minnesota under our Constitution stand for election every 6 years. They are civil service judges whose decision in this process would be finalized but for the Court of Appeals review. So it's a very different process. Now, that again is not to mitigate against the expertise and the knowledge of the ALJs. They are very smart individuals who have long experience and are good at what they do. But the questions before them are questions which, under the Administrative Procedures Act, are more properly, in the end, I submit, determined by the agency heads, subject to the appropriate judicial branch review. And that's the system that we have, and I think that's an appropriate system, members.
Further discussion on House File 1560? Secretary will give it its third reading.
Yeah. House File Number 1560, a bill for an act relating to state government, third reading.
Further discussion. Secretary will take the roll.
Mr. President, I'm sorry.
Senator Latz.
Thank you. There's just one last point I forgot to make, and it may have been made already on the floor. I'm not sure. This has been a long discussion. The letter we have from Dolly points out that in 97 out of 100 cases, they agree with the ALJ's decision. So there are only a very few cases. I would submit that's probably typical throughout government. So there are really very few cases where the system that we have even results in an outcome that would create the conflict that Senator Newman's bill is trying to fix. And so I would submit that is just not worth the radical change in our processes that this bill would make.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Now I have to stand up and respond. Just a couple of points that I want to make to Senator Latz's points. Is number one, he is correct that the ALJs are members of civil service. And if you check the history of the Office of Administrative Hearings, they were made civil servants precisely for the point of keeping them independent of the agencies that they were making decisions either for or against. So the fact that they are civil servants, that's done on purpose to help with accountability or the issue of accountability. To the issue of judges being fact finders, Senator Latz is absolutely correct. There are cases in which they are the fact finder. But I will represent to you that they have never been and never will be a party to the action that they are making a decision on. The final point that I want to make is I'm using the district court and the judges for comparative purposes. And I again want to remind you that OAH and administrative law judges are purely created by this legislature. They have nothing to do with the Constitution. We created them. And we have the authority to rein them in terms of what I believe is literally abuses by various state agencies. And as to the number of cases that are contested or affirmed or agreed to as between OAH and the agencies truly is not the issue. The issue is whether the citizen litigant, your constituent, is going to be entitled to have someone who is not a party to the action decide their legal rights and their constitutional rights. That's the issue of this bill. Thank you, Madam President.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 1560. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 36 ayes and 28 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving to today's Senate agenda addendum, which is available in the front of the chamber, we'll move to the fifth order of business, reports of committee. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I move that the committee reports printed in the addendum be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. The sixth order of business, second reading of Senate bills. They are printed on page 5 of the addendum. Second reading. Seventh order of business, the second reading of House bills. They are printed on page 6. Second reading. Ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. There are three authors' resolution or motions. They will be taken as one motion. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that Senate File 880 be stricken and referred to the Committee on Finance. I have talked with the chair of that committee. This is my bill.
And some explanation of the bill, Senator Benson.
It's a mandate review for the Department of Commerce on our current health care mandate set, and we thought by limiting the, we had a fiscal note last year, we thought by limiting the scope and expanding the time, it was something the department could work with. We have found out since the end of the hearing that that is not possible, and so I'd like the opportunity to work on this and refer it to finance.
Thank you, Senator Benson. To Senator Benson's motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I need to move Senate File 2224, which is number 38 on your general orders. I just need to have that stricken and referred to the Committee on Finance.
Some explanation on the bill, Senator Benson.
Yes.
Excuse me, Senator Peterson.
Basically, the situation was it was moving. It's basically an agency bill and originally had no fiscal impact. That has changed, and so there is some fiscal impact that needs to be reviewed.
To Senator Peterson's motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Nenow.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that Senate File 1165 be withdrawn from the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety, be given a second reading, and placed on general orders.
Senator Nenow, some explanation to that motion.
Thank you, Madam President. The Judiciary Committee had originally requested to see this bill. Upon further review, they indicated to me that they do not want to see this bill. Rather than take up their time at committee, we're just making the motion on the floor.
Discussion. Senator Latz.
Madam President, I'm not sure who made the decision on behalf of Judiciary. Perhaps the Chair did, but maybe the Chair could explain what it was that was in the bill that originally got his attention to want to see it and no longer needs our attention in committee.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Latz. I did make the decision that it could be waived from Judiciary. A close look at it, the issues that would have raised my attention initially were rather peripheral after we examined it, and that's why we're moving it away.
Senator Latz.
Madam President, I'm just looking at the bill here, and I see it has to do with mandated referral of suspected maltreatment of children in early childhood situations. And I'm not sure what Judiciary's traditional jurisdiction is on those areas, but if those areas are traditionally our area of jurisdiction, it seems to me something that we ought, as a committee, to consider. I wonder if we could get some further enlightenment on that from the Chairman.
Madam
Senator
President.
Limmer.
Senator Latz, we did look at this. There was no, in our opinion, there was no significant changes to the Child Maltreatment Act. We checked with Senate counsel, Ms. Pontius in particular. She agreed with that conclusion, and that's why we are advancing the bill.
Senator Nenow renews his motion that Senate File 1165 be withdrawn from the Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety, be given a second reading and placed on general orders. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. The Secretary will give Senate File 1165 its second reading.
Senate File Number 1165, a bill for an act relating to children. Second reading.
Second reading. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, remaining under orders of orders of business and motions and resolutions, I move the Senate take up the Senate calendar. Madam President, we would take up 1 through 6, saving 7 for another day.
Thank you, Senator Senjum. We'll take up the Senate calendar. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senate calendar is available in the front of the chamber. Number one on the Senate calendar, Senate File 1620. The Secretary will give 1620 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1620, Bill for an Act Relating to Eminent Domain, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1620. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Number two on the Senate calendar, Senate File 1212. The secretary will give Senate File 1212 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1212, a bill for an act relating to health records, third reading.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President and members, a few days ago we were asked at a gathering down in Granite Falls, if we looked into our hearts and we tell ourselves the truth in the quiet moments, do our actions affirm our lives and affirm other people's lives? Madam President, Senator Brown's bill, to be sure, does do that. It's a good bill, and I'm glad he brought it forward. It gives family members the opportunity to access those medical records in that very critical time of life, the end of life. Madam President, when each of us had the opportunity when this bill was up for debate to give even the minimal measure of dignity to gay and lesbian families to carry out their most sacred responsibility at the end of their lives after a lifetime of commitment and responsibility, many of you individually said no to those families. You did not affirm life. You did not affirm their lives. Members, the actions you take on this floor have very real consequences. They cause real harm and real pain in people's lives. I support Senator Brown's bill, but I just have to express my profound disappointment in the actions of this chamber a few days ago.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1212. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 65 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Members, just as a reminder, we have about four more votes, and if we stay very close to our seats, we are able to move this quickly. Number three on the Senate calendar, Senate File 1542. The secretary will give Senate File 1542 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1542, a bill for an act relating to insurance, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1542. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Number four on the Senate calendar, House File 2152. The secretary will give House File 2152 its third reading.
House File Number 2152, a bill for an act relating to commerce, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 2152. Secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Number five on the Senate calendar, House File 300. The secretary will give House File 300 its third reading.
House File Number 300, a bill for an act relating to education, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on House File 300. Secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Number six on the Senate calendar, Senate File 1528. The secretary will give Senate File 1528 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1528, a bill for an act relating to education, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1528. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 53 ayes and 11 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, I would move a brief recess for purposes of appointing a conference committee.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. We are in recess.
Madam President.
Senator Senjum.
Is there a privileged report at the desk?
I'm sorry, I need to call us back to order, Senator Senjum. Senate is in order, Senator Senjum. There is a privileged report at the desk. The secretary will report.
Senator Senjum from the Subcommittee on Conference Committee recommends that the following senators be and they hereby are appointed as a conference committee on House File Number 382. Senators Thompson, Newman, and Latz. Senator Senjum moves that the foregoing appointments be approved.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam President. I just wanted to encourage you to stop by the Great Hall on the ground floor of the Capitol. after session or any time until 4 p.m. for a demonstration of how Minnesota teachers are using Microsoft's Xbox Connect and other innovative technology in the classroom. It's a great demonstration of how this technology in the classroom creates an engaging, motivating environment that stimulates learning a wider range of skills. So anytime today up till 4 p.m., I'd encourage you to stop by the Great Hall. Thanks.
Without objection, the following senators will be excused for the day. Senator Cohen from 11 to 11:45 a.m., Senator Hoffman from 12:30 to the end of session, and Senator Brown from 12:40 to the end of session. Without objection, they are excused. Further announcements of Senate interest. Senator Senjum.
Madam President, the business of the day now being concluded, I would move that we adjourn until Monday, March 19th at 11 a.m. 11 a.m.
Senator Senjum has moved that we adjourn until Monday, March 19th at 11 a.m. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. We are adjourned.